Welcome to the Working World. I'm Karen Mendes.
And I'm Jamie Lingham.
Jamie, we just had the pleasure of sitting down and speaking with Dave Collins, who's the founder and CEO of Oakham Reeds, who offers practical communication training to our various clients around the world. Wow, some insights that he's left us with and some great tools and techniques, particularly for leaders in the business, but also the HR community. Great chat.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, Karen, we have those shows where you start recording and start talking and you think, okay, I've got a window. How are we going to fill it, or how are we going to fill this slot? And it was just, it ended too soon. You know, I think that it was, Dave was super engaging. I think, you know, some of the tools and techniques that he's left us with, and you know, as I said in the show, that I've been writing them down, just looking at setting the rules for hybrid communication, just a really simple conversation where I think people didn't have the option to do it. I just think he had so much value to bring, and particularly the fact that he deals with improvisation, comedy, and acting, and he sort of brings a lot of that methodology into training up teams and making communication in the workforce and change a lot more effective.
Yeah, he certainly does leave you feeling kind of uplifted after a conversation with Dave. But yeah, I think that improv and comedy side does bring a unique slant to the work that he does around workplace strategy and communications. But one particular sneak peek into the episode that I particularly took away from it was that the medium in which you communicate is just as or more important than the message itself. So for me, that's that was a good one.
Yeah, no, lots of gems in this one. I absolutely guarantee you. All right, well, let's jump into it. G'day, Dave. Welcome to the show. How's it all going?
It's going well. I'm having a good evening, and it's morning for you all. So excited to connect.
Yeah, no, it's really good to have you on. Now, I was going through your website and having a look at the stuff that you've done. I suppose before we get started, I'm just curious if you can give us a quick 1 to 2 minute background on you and how you got to be where you've been, because I know you use acting, I know you use your comedy, you know, but also to help businesses and teams. So if you want to just sort of kick that off, it'd be really interesting, I think, for everyone.
Yeah. Thanks for starting there. And I would say my background is basically twofold. I started my career as a change management consultant right after college, after university. And I was working for a large consultancy called AECOM, where we did a lot of design engineering. And our group basically focused on designing workplaces. We were workplace strategists. And so that's how I got my start facilitating, kind of walking large organizations, large and small, through new workplaces and essentially teaching people the communication, collaboration, and self-awareness skills to adapt to new technologies, new physical spaces, new arrangements in literal the built space in literal offices. So those are really fun workshops. My other half of my career has been as an improv comedian. So I've been doing that for a decade plus, and I love it. The only problem is hard to make a career out of doing improv comedy. There's only maybe a handful of people who can make a living doing it, and they're incredible. But that passion for getting up on stage, working in teams to create scenes from scratch, essentially on stage or in practice. I actually have my team's meeting later tonight to do a practice, has been one of my passions. And basically, I decided to merge those two worlds together to start my own business about 8 years ago, teaching the tools of improv comedy to people in business as a way to be better communicators. And from there, that spawned a lot of different workshops beyond just the classic kind of improv for business into a lot of different areas that we now teach and coach on.
Fantastic. I love it. I think it's a really, I mean, you know, I think people, they probably need a bit of acting and comedy in business. You know, I hear imposter syndrome a lot from people, particularly high-level managers. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said about passing those skills across. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
I think a lot of it really has to do with not necessarily being anyone other than yourself, which I think is something a lot of people are afraid of in a workplace, especially as in virtual settings, which we'll get into today.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm safe in saying that you're the first improv or comedian that we've had on the Working World. So welcome. Dave, our audience is mainly made up of HR practitioners, leaders in the HR field, global mobility specifically as well. And I guess a lot of those people right now, when we talk about, and you spoke briefly just then about the, you know, the physical workplace, a lot of challenges for our audience right now is in relation to hybrid working. So remote plus a bit of office, or sometimes even just 100% remote. And I guess just thinking about, you know, the background that you spoke about that you have in workplace strategy and communication training, can you tell us, I guess, why those areas are important and why our audience should start to look at those areas when they're looking to manage a hybrid workforce?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think there's a lot of ways to tackle hybrid work. And one of the angles I've been approaching it from is the same thing I was doing a decade ago with AECOM. And a lot of it has to do with being really clear with what our norms are, what our communication expectations are. Because I think, especially at the beginning of COVID, like 2020, a lot of companies just went virtual. And there wasn't a lot of conversation about what's going to change, what do we maintain, and really specifically, how are we going to use all of these new virtual communication tools and channels and mediums, instead of just saying, okay, now we had a weekly team meeting, it's now on Microsoft Teams. We had a one-on-one check-in, we're going to do that one-on-one on Zoom. A lot of companies simply just mapped existing types of communication to virtual, instead of stepping back and realizing that the actual way you're communicating, you know, classic Marshall McLuhan quote of the medium is the message. The actual medium you use is just as important as what you're saying and doing on it. So to just simply try to recreate in a virtual space caused a lot of tension and caused a lot of frustration. And, you know, whether you want to call it burnout or simply, you know, people's eyes were just glazing over because they're staring at a screen for 8 to 10 hours a day, trying to replicate what happened in person previously without a real understanding that we don't, it's not the same thing. It's just to meet online is simply not the same theme, even if it's the same people and the same conversations and the same topics. It's a very different type of work and a very different thing you're doing. And so we start there. I kind of go back to first principles and talk about what's our expectation for participating in a Slack channel. Does it differ by Slack channels? Is responding with a thumbs up enough to say I read it? Does that mean different things to different folks? And again, this is a long answer because I could talk for hours on this. But when I do a workshop on virtual or hybrid communication, it's so interesting the unspoken expectations that bubble up that no one's ever had a chance to actually put words to. And that's really where I start.
It's a bit sort of like, you know, it sounds so simple, and I suppose it's like good comedy, right? Like a lot of those, the comedy that comes out, it's all pretty simple stuff, you know, and that's what makes people laugh. And I think this sort of thing feels simple to me, but I'm sure not many people that I know, we certainly didn't do it as an organization. We didn't set ground rules. We sort of just rolled onto Zoom and we just had, you know, we didn't actually say, okay, well, and we're starting to say it now, please don't, you know, sit on emails, because I can tell, I can watch your eyes moving and how, you know, getting people engaged. I just think that having that framework around just makes such sense. How do you go into organizations, I suppose, retraining them and actually, you know, resetting this whole conversation?
Yeah. So it starts a couple different ways. One is what workshops where we get intact teams together. And one of my favorite exercises is called Love Hate. I developed it in the beginning of COVID, and it's really simple. I get people to break out in groups of three and we pick a medium, right? Pick Slack, pick email, pick Zoom meetings, and give people a couple minutes to say, what are the behaviors you love in that medium? And then what are the pet peeves? What are the things that absolutely drive you up a wall? And take a few minutes, just jot that down to yourself, you know, write it down and then share in a group of three. And what's always so funny is you get a lot of, oh, I never thought of that. Or yeah, wow, that is kind of annoying, huh? Or that's a good one, I'm gonna steal that. And as a facilitator, you know, I'm coming in kind of, you know, sight unseen, I don't know these people, and I go, how have you been meeting for years and you never talked about this stuff. You never voiced it. And it's not a complex exercise, right? It is not, I'm not like reinventing the wheel here, but I'm just pointing at the wheel and giving people a chance to talk about it. Because often it's unspoken and we start there and there's a lot of other places we go from that.
Is there, I guess if you had a kind of wish list or you could provide a wish list to line managers around key communication or change management tools that they could pull on or use to assist them in managing and transitioning, you know, either to remote or hybrid or both, what would that look like? What would that list look like?
Yeah, so my favorite change management tool is something called the Change Curve. And it's a really basic change tool. You can Google it, the Change Curve. And it kind of comes from the Kubler-Ross stages of grief. And it essentially looks at the emotions people tend to go through when experiencing a change, like an individual. And I always start there when I teach change workshops, because I think it's really eye-opening for leaders and managers to be able to put to words the various emotions that they're seeing in their people as they go through a change. Like, let's just say as they roll out a new CRM system or they roll out Microsoft Teams or whatever, right? You know, it starts with shock, then it goes into anger and frustration, then it goes into depression and confusion, kind of the bottom of the curve. Mm-hmm. And then finally acceptance. And then you start to see people being creative and problem solving. And it takes a while to start to see those positive benefits. What always frustrates leaders who don't really know about the change curve is they're usually farther along because they're the ones who have been thinking about it longer. Mm-hmm. And the only real input is time, right? You've had more time to process it. It doesn't make you smarter or better at change. It just means you got a 2 week or a 2 month head start. Mm-hmm. So while you're over here in problem solving mode, everyone else is going, wait, what did you just say? Mm-hmm. What are we doing? And they're going through that curve. And I think it's helpful for managers and leaders to have a little patience. I also think it's really useful to have words that are safe to use for an individual to say, you know, I'm in stage two. I'm not loving this right now. I'll be somewhere else tomorrow, but let me point to a chart and make it safe for me to talk about my frustration rather than feeling like I can't express that or like it's not allowed. Because that's just humans going through change.
It's interesting because, yeah, by having an identifying or depersonalizing the stages, I guess if we can call that, you're right, it does give the individual the permission in the right space to be able to air their concerns. And I guess the other tricky thing is, and I've used this stage curve that you're talking about, the change curve that you're talking about before, the interesting thing was I was always at a different point than my other team members as well. And I think for managers, that's tricky because if you've got multiple people that you're leading, they're going to be at different stages at different times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what's also, I use it as a tool. I say, hey, do a 5-minute exercise at the beginning of your weekly meeting. You know, if it's online, put it in a slide, have people put their initials on where they are, visualize it. It takes 2 minutes. And then it will be very helpful so you know how people are going to then show up that day or that week. And also track it because people will move forward. Or if someone's stuck, then you go talk to them one-on-one. So it adds data. It's a it's a squishy emotion exercise that is actually more objective than I think a lot of the methods managers will use or leaders will use by just kind of feeling like nothing's happening. You can actually track this stuff.
Sure.
So I suppose, you know, thinking of groups and changes, and obviously we don't always have the luxury of time to implement certain changes. I mean, COVID's a classic example, right? How do you wrap your arms around everybody and bring them on the journey? Are there techniques that you can use to make that change more stable and secure and inclusive?
Yeah, it's a great question. The simplest one is figure out what's in it for them. I always like starting that. Figure out the what's in it for me, right? That you're communicating to the various audiences. Because I think a lot of, and you know, we don't have to always keep using COVID, but it's ultimately, it's the ultimate change management case study. I think there really wasn't a lot of thought put into, you know, what's in it for person X versus person Y to go work from home right now.
Yeah.
They're the obvious safety concerns, but really, it forces leaders to put themselves in the shoes of the people that they're asking to change and be honest. sometimes the what's in it for me is really weak and there isn't a lot in it for someone. And it's kind of like, well, you'll still be working here, right? You'll still have a job if you successfully complete this change. In those cases, I think it's really useful to understand that these are the groups that are probably going to be the most resistant. And what can you do to sweeten the pot? Or what can you do to be a little more patient? And it allows you to be a little more strategic because you'll realize this audience or this individual or this type of subject matter expert, they're really going to struggle. So I'm going to start there and focus the energy on those folks. Because I think a lot of leaders just assume everyone's going to get in line, and change is an inherently selfish thing. And so you got to speak in selfish terms for good purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I guess that, you know, we're kind of talking about known people that we work with, right? And so that kind of, I guess, softens the process a little bit because you do have the ability to be able to identify probably more easily as a manager, you know, what those individuals are looking to get out of that change process. When it comes to individuals that you have just met, and so if I'm thinking about the interviewing space or the recruitment space, obviously a lot of recruitment now is done more virtually in light of COVID. And so virtual interviewing, I guess, has been more widely adopted and is a key method for sourcing talent, particularly in a global context.
Yeah.
I guess, though, that then that leads to potentially virtual onboarding, which comes with its own challenges around integration. And so I guess, what have you seen with the organizations you've worked with around being, you know, the main challenge, and what methods and tools would you recommend that they could lead with in a recruitment or in a sourcing space to get better and faster integration for their new hires?
Yeah. I think so much. There's so many things that have changed with interviewing. And, you know, I've been doing an interview training for years now that is really focused on using structure as a tool to help lessen the load on interviewers, to give them a focus area, to be really precise with what counts as evidence and what is the kind of thing you want to ignore. Mm-hmm. What's like noise in that. So that's one element of like what structure really does, having clear rubrics. And the other thing is talking about what's the difference between culture and values. And in an interview process, how do we get people out of the habit of trying to triangulate culture fit and instead really focusing on values fit or values add, which is a static target, right? We have our values. Ideally, you have them defined at kind of a level deeper of observable behaviors, and then being really clear with when you're trying to identify, does this person have the ability to work in a way that aligns with what we mean when we say collaboration, or what we mean when we say we build an inclusive team, these observable everyday kind of stuff, and not trying to kind of go with your gut, because interviewing is already rife with biases showing up, but especially virtually, where your lens is so narrow and you learn so little about this person, it's so easy to have biases crop up. Like, just like the fact that in my background here, you can learn a lot about me, right? That has nothing to do with how I'm going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But very often you'll make a decision, oh, that person seems great because they got a bunch of plants. They're probably very chill, right? We might not even put words to that, but it happens. Mm-hmm. So be really careful about biases cropping up in those settings.
Mm-hmm.
So just on the whole hiring thing, I mean, obviously it's a global phenomenon at the moment. You know, I think the skill shortages are very well documented, particularly in a lot of industries. I know you've written articles on how to hire better people faster. I am personally sitting on the edge of my seat, curious to get your thoughts on how that can happen, and particularly in this current environment where people are, you know, the market is so competitive and, you know, individuals are asking for higher salaries and they can move faster. So how do hiring managers actually look to hire better people and make it faster?
Yeah, I think so. A couple simple tips. One is edit your job descriptions. I think cutting them down and making it really clear with what is actually a requirement? What are the actual skills? What is our actual bar for hiring? Yep. And not creating this magical wish list and yep. then hoping to kind of make those two things fit. So another way to put that is make the job description as bare bones as possible. Mm-hmm. And then through the screening process, trust your talent and recruiting team to be able to weed out folks so that you can get some diamonds in the rough. And I think the problem is when we get really overdone with job descriptions, where we have 19 requirements, you end up having qualified people self-select out of the process because yep. they don't meet one or two of these things that ultimately mm-hmm. the hiring manager doesn't really care about, but they think they should put it there. Mm-hmm. So if recruiters can get really good at pushing back and saying, okay, if this person doesn't have items 6, 7, and 8, would you still hire them? If the answer is yes, don't put it on the job description, right? Yeah. So cut that stuff out. And also it makes it a lot easier to screen once you get to the hiring or the interviewing portion where you have maybe 3 or 4 key skills. And mm-hmm. that's a lot easier to cover and get some overlap if you have a couple of interviewers there, as opposed to saying like, I don't even know what's critical. I don't even know really where to start. And that's where you get a lot of interviewers kind of freewheeling because yeah. they end up going with the, you know, what's your favorite animal type questions because they don't have any hope of covering the actual skills.
Are those plants real behind you?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Where'd you go on vacation last
yeah,
week?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's that book on helpful. The shelf there? I can. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one. And I think, you know, from a candidate experience perspective, reminding everyone, every single interviewer, that they're also in the sales and closing business, right? They are all recruiters. And so being really clear with, you have to have answers to the questions you're going to get from candidates. You have mm-hmm. to have answers. Why do you love working here? Or what's your day-to-day look like? Because if people aren't able to answer that, they're interviewing you too, especially virtually, because you don't have the luxury of walking them through your beautiful office, right? Yeah. It's everything hinges on those 4 to 5 people they're talking with.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think the interviewing you is, I think that's, we're finding that a lot, which I think is great. I love the fact that people go ahead and say, well, hey, this has got to be right for me. It's not just right mm-hmm. for you. And I think that's, you know, I think it's great. Mm.
Yeah.
Now, Dave, you spoke a little bit at the start of our conversation around your experience or your background in improv comedy. So I just want to circle back to that for a little bit. You know, obviously you spoke about you took some of the learnings from that experience and then you applied it across your professional experience at AECOM and other organisations. I wondered, particularly in relation to remote management or remote management arrangements where leaders are looking to manage staff either globally or locally in a hybrid world. Can you suggest how they may use some of those tools and tricks that you've picked up in improv comedy yeah. across to that kind of professional setting?
Yeah, there's so many. Where to start? I think improv comedy really hinges on this concept of yes and. And mm-hmm. if you... there's lots written about it, but simply put, yes and is the one rule in an improv show. When I go on stage with my partner or a group of people, I know that every idea I put out there, the other person with me on stage has to say yes and to it. And there's two parts. It's saying yes, which is what you just said is real and true in the context of our scene. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to add something to further this along. Doesn't work if you just say yes, because you'll just agree with each other and nothing will build. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay for them to just add stuff because then you'll just be two ships passing in the night. So this idea is how you get creative, interesting stuff built out of nothing. Because I walk on stage and say, you know, I love this new coffee shop. Thanks for meeting me here for our first date. My scene partner has to say, okay, we're meeting each other. We're at a coffee shop. We're on a date. What else can I add? Oh, let me grab our lattes. And let's talk about our pets or whatever it is, right? I'm just making this up.
Sure. Yeah.
In the context of work, I think yes and is this beautiful idea for how to deal with new ideas. Mm-hmm. Any idea you're given, you can say no and critique, or you can say yes and, in the sense that yes is not agreeing to it. It's not implementing it immediately, but it's more validating that that idea has some merit. Let's explore it. And there's so many applications for this: creativity, brainstorming. The biggest one, I would say, especially in a virtual context, is listening. I think listening skills are the top thing every single virtual or hybrid worker can always get better at. Because just doing what we're doing here, mm-hmm. it is exponentially harder to listen to someone when they're talking to you on Zoom than it is in person. It's more boring. There's less social protocol around getting distracted. There's less information, right? You're only seeing this box mm-hmm. and everything is flattened. The subtle cues I'm giving you with my full body language, you're going to miss that stuff. And honestly, most people are just staring at their own face when they talk on Zoom. So listening skills, I love teaching. I spend hours with clients just working on listening skills because mm-hmm. everything builds off of that.
I like that. Yes, and it's almost, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I've understood it to be almost like a tool for encouraging diversity of thought and diversity in conversation. Is that a fair kind of summation in a HR context?
Yeah, I think in an HR context, it's a perfect application because okay. it starts with the yes. You have mm-hmm. to actually meet someone where they are. You have to hear what they're saying or what they're trying to, you know, in an HR context, what are they trying to bring with them into the workplace?
Yeah.
An aspect of their identity, a personality, a style. And if you don't pick up on that, if you don't yes that and give it space to breathe, they will shut down. Mm. They will go into hiding. They will not bring that with them. And it becomes really hard to connect. It becomes really hard to stay engaged. And that person will leave relatively quickly.
You're right, though. I mean, this whole notion of the online stuff is obviously you're trying to figure out, you know, what the body language is. Are they a threat? Are they, engaging with me? And I suppose as a leader or as a manager, even a team member, getting engaging more, listening. Do you find that just by repeating what you've said or maybe reinforcing those things is a good way to help promote active listening?
Yeah, that's actually one of the basic exercises I love to do is just practicing listening to reflect, where we'll do a short exercise. It's really simple. I mean, it's not my exercise. This is a classic coaching exercise.
Let's run it. Let's go.
Yeah, you get someone to talk about something that matters, like a moment in their life where that they felt great. So, and we could do it right now.
Let's do it. Come on.
60 seconds. So, Jamie. Who wants to do it? Jamie, Karen, either one of you.
Jamie wants to do it.
Thanks,
Karen. I want you to take 60 seconds and tell me about a moment where you felt on top of the world. Just a peak experience for you.
Sure. I swim in the cold water and I swim all through winter in the bay in Melbourne without a wetsuit. And it's funny. One of the guys I swim with, he says it perfectly. He said, I never liked the man walking in, but I always like the man coming out. And the other day I had a friend come along and he said, I'm out the front, sort of beep the horn, come on, let's go for a swim. And, you know, you've got to remember we're coming into winter here. It was cold. I think it was snowing in the mountains. And so I came out, jumped in the car and I said, Jim, this is ridiculous. I said, this is what summer used to be like. And now we get the cold back and we're so excited to get to the beach and go for a swim. Yeah. So outside of that, you come out like just feeling incredible.
Okay, great. So what I then ask people to do is what matters most to you in that situation and how does that reflect your values, which is a challenge for a lot of people. So in that situation, right, in that story of getting in the water, I think what mattered most to you was camaraderie and being with your friend there, but also that transformation. That was that quote you mentioned, right, which to me is you like the man coming out of the water. So if I'm going to challenge myself and try to pick up on values, you love a personal challenge that maybe is a little tricky, but helps change you, right? Yeah. Helps convert you. Or maybe just being really present in that cold water is something that really matters to you.
Bang on. Tick, tick, tick. Yep. You got all full stars there. It's exactly what it is. I mean, it's, there's a lot in that and it does, it's good that you can pick that up, you know, that value stuff. And yeah, that's quite powerful, isn't it?
And that was 3 minutes. right? Yeah. So I think doing a version of that where you partner people up in a breakout room, you talk about inclusion, you talk about feeling a sense of belonging. Mm. Sometimes you gotta kind of force people to share a little bit, but being able to share that and then having someone hear you and pick up on stuff that maybe you didn't even know you were showing and telling through your what matters to you moment. These are how I teach inclusion.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be any bigger than that. But if you do this a lot, get people to connect, and you also, you're practicing the muscle of actually listening to someone talk.
Mm. I love it. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was really good. Thank you. That was obviously one skill that I guess managers could implement when working with hybrid teams. I wonder whether you know, you could speak to, you know, some other skills perhaps where you may have trickier introverted personalities, or you from a cultural perspective, perhaps, you know, you have a team member in a different location that isn't comfortable sharing, you know, like Jamie's story in front of the team or anything personal about themselves. And I wondered whether, you know, there were any tips for those trickier situations that you could share, and I guess what works and what doesn't work well.
Yeah. So this is sort of from my facilitator toolbox, this one. Sure. And going back to something we talked about earlier, the false equivalency between a team meeting in person and a team meeting on Zoom. Mm-hmm. You know, a team meeting in person is a rich environment for a variety of communication styles to thrive. Because if you think about it, there's the moment as people are entering the room, there's the early birds, there's the late people, maybe the early birds chit chat, you know, to the person next to you, kind of have a little, how was your weekend situation? You're seeing people enter. There's also in the room itself, as one person is talking, you can kind of talk to someone quietly. Did I hear that correctly? Or like, do you really think that's going on? The little sidebars. And then there's also the ability to read the room, to read facial expressions of 9 people and understand, is this landing? Is this not landing? Are there questions? How is this room hot, cold? That's all out the window on Zoom. Everyone gets airdropped in, you know, like you've been teleported in. The sidebar is text. It's not whispers. You know, a lot of people are multitasking. It's a very different environment.
Mm.
And so an exercise I like to do is, or it's really a concept, it's called think, pair, share, to help different learning styles operate in a group environment. So let's say you're a team and you want to get thoughts on a potential proposal, right? I'm sort of using a generic, should we go after this client or not? What I like to do is break it up into 3 stages. Instead of just saying, what do you think? And asking everyone at once, have a question prompt. Give 2 to 3 minutes in silence to allow people to write notes to maybe 2 to 3 questions. What are the pros and cons? You know, let's do, maybe you do like a SWOT analysis on your own. However you want to phrase it, give people 2 to 3 minutes on their own to think and gather their thoughts. That allows people who are not going to be the first with their hands up to actually get some ideas out in the open. Then, before you open it up, send people into breakout rooms with a partner. Have them talk about what they just thought about with one other person. Have a one-on-one conversation. Hear what they have to say. Maybe get some yes ands going, kind of improve the ideas. And then with the prompt that you're going to come out of those breakouts and each person is going to be asked to share 1 or 2 ideas. By then, you've given some rounds of thought. You've given the quieter, more introverted folks a chance to have their ideas validated. Mm-hmm. And then the group conversation is that much, much richer, because everyone feels prepared.
Sure.
And it still may be a couple people dominating, but at least you've given space for those who don't always dominate to think about the topic, and they can always send their ideas after.
Mm-hmm.
It takes structure.
Yeah.
And that takes planning. It's not hard, but it's another example of you can't just transplant the in-person stuff into Zoom and hope you get the same quality of conversation. You got to add a little structure.
As as someone who often gets overexcited in meetings, particularly when it's about ideas, I think this is fantastic because I can see how my behaviour can probably limit some people from what they say. And I do try my hardest to sit on my hands or butt my fingers or something. I don't know, whatever I can do. But I get, do get pretty excited, especially when it's a fun idea. So this to me is brilliant. I think that, I see thinking my own team and, who are the people who speak up more often than not? And I just think giving that airtime to everyone and that, but also that not only that sense of belonging, but just saying to them, okay, well, giving them that ownership of that time slot and that idea is good, mm-hmm. because I think that obviously will encourage them more to next time. And so maybe they'll start to do that. I think that's, I've been writing a bunch of notes while we've been talking, and that's definitely one of the ones that, one of the few I'm going to implement. I've got to tell you, Dave, if we always think if we can just change one person's life by some good ideas for this show, it's good. So you can just say, job done, pat yourself on the back, because already I'm in sort of overload here.
I love that. Yeah, and yeah. I'll say with the think, pair, share, that's how I structure exercises. But also one really important aspect of that is the quiet person gets one person who potentially can speak up for them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes having them come back to the main room and say, this is not you, but Jamie had a great idea. Let's hear it. Right. So you get that person to step up on behalf of someone else. And that's a great feeling too, because sometimes that person may just need a little boost to share their idea.
We did a team activity the other day, and it was quite interesting. We went to an art place, and we all sort of drew pictures around our heads, and then we painted these sort of Picasso-style paintings. And the brief of the day was, when we arrived, sit with people you've never spoken to, right? And it was such a great experience, because I sat with three people, two in the business. I didn't interact that often with, and a new person. And I sort of look back on that. It was such a rich experience, having that out of your comfort zone, but I think also pairing up with the people who you just don't, sit down with. And so we actually had, I think four or five hours together and just learning about them. And, it was fantastic. I think putting people in those zones is such an mm-hmm. important, sort of way to run your business, right?
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
Mm. Yeah, it was great.
Well, Dave, I think, we could, all three of us could probably talk about this all day.
What do you mean? We're not talking about this all day?
No, our audience needs to either get back to work or finish their lunch break or.
Exactly.
So we will leave it there. But thank you, Dave, so much for your insights. There's a myriad of just different ideas, catchphrases, things that we'll be talking about, I think, for some time in the working world. So thank you so much for your insights. Thank you for your time and joining us today, and for contributing to the network. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was delightful. So I wish you the best of your day as you're doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, we're ahead of you, and I can tell you your Wednesday's looking pretty good from this point.
Okay, good. Good. I've got a workshop on this tomorrow, so I'm glad that
went well. On your Wednesday.
You're right, warmed up.
Doing fine. Just echoing Karen's comments, I just think some of the takeouts were fantastic. We've loved having you on the show. I'm sure we'll drag you back in at some stage down the track if you're okay with it. I think you're learning and growing every day. That's what we're about. And I think that, we look forward to catch up again.
Yeah, fantastic. Anytime. It was a great chat today.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good
one. Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Okay. See ya.
Bye.